I wonder if you have ever noticed how insistent the Bible is that there's no such thing really as a static personality. Now, by that I mean that the Bible teaches us that our characters and our personalities are always changing. It's now 7 o'clock. You have already changed since 6:30. So have I. Imperceptibly, of course, you're not aware that you've changed, but you've changed. Last Sunday evening, you were a certain kind of person, spiritually. You have changed this week. You may not have noticed it, because changes tend to be very gradual and imperceptible. But believe me, you've changed. And by the time we finished worship here this evening, you will have changed again, and so will have I. You see? Because I'm changing as well. I change under my own preaching, because I preach the sermons to myself before I preach them to you. Sometimes that's just as painful for me as it is for you. You are a different person tonight from the person you were a year ago. You may not be aware of this change, because the change is very, very subtle. You see, there is no such thing as a static personality. We are all changing. And every man or woman at every moment of his life is either being shaped by God into the everlasting glories who are going to populate his everlasting kingdom, or else they are being shaped by the evil one into the everlasting horrors, the nightmares that will be hell. We are either becoming better men and women, or we are becoming worse men and women. When we go home this evening, everyone here, including the preacher, will be nearer Jesus Christ, or just that bit imperceptibly further away from Jesus Christ. We are either learning to love the truth of God, or else we are learning to detest it. We are either learning to bow to Jesus Christ willingly, or we have grown more and more hard. You see, our personalities are in a state of flux. Now, some of us change more quickly than others. I have known Christian teenagers make more spiritual progress in a matter of months than older Christians have made in 70 years of a lifetime's walk with Jesus Christ. You see, the rate at which we change varies from person to person. I have known men and women come to Jesus Christ and get the message immediately. They've never looked back. Oh, of course, they've made failures and mistakes, and they've slipped off the narrow road. But by and large, they've got the message of Jesus. They've got the message of surrender and obedience and consecration, and they have gone rocketing on with Jesus Christ to become fruitful and useful and usable servants of the gospel. And I have known other men and women get stuck with Jesus from the day they professed to know him. You see, we all change, but the rate of change is different. Let me use theatrical terms for this. When it comes to stage lighting, Satan is a master electrician. Now, I wonder if you've done any drama in your day. I used to do a lot of drama when I was a student. It was always very fascinating, before you walked on stage, to see what the electricians were doing in the wings, twiddling with knobs and things that made lights dim. Pink lights came up and green lights came down. It was an education just to watch the people behind the scenes, twiddling knobs and pressing buttons, and on the stage, imperceptibly, the lighting was changing. Now you see, it's like that with character. Because your character is a battlefield. Your soul is a battlefield between Christ and Satan. And the changes in the lighting are imperceptible. And they're subtle. It's like, if I can change the metaphor, it's like watching a nice sunset on the West Coast. You know how you get magnificent sunsets off Lewis. If you go to the west side of Lewis and watch the sunsets, very, very beautiful, imperceptible, gradual shades. Now I suppose that the final jump between light and dark must be very, very fine. But it's there. And at one point it's day, and at the next point it's night. You see, our characters are changing imperceptibly. You may not notice it, but they're changing. Now, what has all this to do with David? Well, you see, we read two chapters tonight, 27 and 29. And superficially, these chapters seem to be a continuation of the adventures of David. And he seems to be the same sort of hero, doing great exploits and being a valiant man. And at first sight, it seems to be the old David. But you see, the lighting has changed. Now, I want you to see this in David's character, and I want to apply it to our own characters on the way to the kingdom, because that's the message, you see. The anointed man on the way to his throne. Every Christian here is an anointed person on the way to a kingdom, because Jesus Christ has promised that when in the world to come, Christians are going to be the heirs and the rulers in a vast spiritual kingdom. And so here's the message, that even Christians on the way to their throne and their crown and their glory and their everlasting reward, even Christians, you see, are changing imperceptibly. And beyond the superficial glamour of these two chapters and David, the big man and the hero, he has changed for the worse. And I want you to see it. If you turn to 1 Chronicles, you see this episode in David's life is described in great detail. 1 Chronicles. Found it? Chapter 12 and verse 1. Now we'll read selectively. Can't read all of this. But it lets you see what's happening now to David's character in particular. Now these are the men who came to David at Ziklag, Philistine city, while he could not move about freely because of Saul the son of Kish. And they were among the mighty men who helped him in war. They were bowmen. You see, the whole chapter is full of violence. I want you to see it. They were bowmen and could shoot arrows and sling stones with either the right or the left hand. They were Benjaminites, Saul's kingdom. Watch all the tribes who are gathering round David now to make him the big man he thought he was. Benjaminites, Saul's kinsmen. Verse 8. Men from the tribe of Gad join him. From the Gadites there went over to David at the stronghold in the wilderness mighty and experienced warriors. You see? It's all about war and cruelty and bloodshed. Mighty and experienced warriors, expert with shield and spear, whose faces were like the faces of lions, and who were swift as gazelles upon the mountains. You see the men who are joining him? Verse 14 tells us that these Gadites, the men from the tribe of Gad, were officers of the army, the lesser over 100 and the greater over 1,000. These are the men who crossed the Jordan in the first month when it was overflowing all its banks and put to flight all those in the valleys to the east and to the west. 16. And some of the men of Benjamin and of Judah, two tribes, came to the stronghold to David. David went out to meet them and said to them, "If you have come to me in friendship to help me, my heart will be knit to you. But if to betray me to my adversaries, although there is no wrong in my hands, then may the God of our fathers see and rebuke you." Then the Spirit came upon Amasai, chief of the 30, and he said, "We are yours, O David, and with you, O son of Jesse. Peace, peace to you, and peace to your helpers, for your God helps you." Then David received them and made them officers of his troops. 19. Then some of the men of the tribe of Manasseh deserted to David. You see, King Saul's kingdom's falling to bits. When he came with the Philistines for the battle against Saul, yet he did not help them, for the rulers of the Philistines took counsel and sent David away, saying, "At peril to our heads he will desert to his master Saul." As he went to Ziklag, these men of Manasseh deserted to him. Verse 21, they helped David against the band of raiders, for they were all mighty men of valor and were commanders in the army. For from day to day men kept coming to David to help him until there was a great army like an army of God. You see how big he is now. Bit of a change from a wee loony wee a catapult, don't you think? But he was. He was just a nobody, just the youngest, with a catapult. But things have changed, and David has changed. 23. These are the numbers of the divisions of the armed troops who came to David in Hebron to turn the kingdom of Saul over to him, according to the word of the Lord. The men of Judah, they've joined him too, bearing shield and spear, 6,800 armed troops. Verse 25, from the tribe of Simeon, mighty men of valor for war, 7,100. 26, from the tribe of Levi, 4,600. The prince Jehoiada of the house of Aaron, and with him 3,700. Bit of a change for a shepherd boy, don't you think? 28. Zadok, a young man, mighty in valor. 29. From the Benjaminites, the kinsmen of Saul, 3,000, of whom the majority had hitherto kept their allegiance to the house of Saul. 30. From the tribe of Ephraim, 20,800. Mighty men of valor, famous men in their father's houses. 31. From the half tribe of Manasseh, 18,000, who were expressly named to come and make David king. Of Issachar, men who had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do, 200 chiefs and all their kinsmen under their command, 33, from the tribe of Zebulun, 50,000 seasoned troops, equipped for battle with all the weapons of war, to help David with singleness of purpose. 34, from Naphtali, 1,000 commanders, with whom were 37,000 men, armed with shield and spear. 35, from the tribe of Dan, 28,600 men, equipped for battle. 36, from the tribe of Asher. Can you take all this in? A wee laddie with a sling. And this is what's happened to him. You see, it takes a big man to handle spiritual power. God's very, very choosy about the people to whom he gives real spiritual power in his kingdom, because not many Christians can stand it. I can think of some families in Scotland tonight who could stand it. I think particularly of some of the old Brethren families down around Glasgow. Do you remember Horniman's Toffees? That was a Christian family. Do you remember Cowan's My Sweet? That was a Christian family. And half the shipyards on Clydeside used to be owned by Christian people. Colville's, Steele, they were Christians. But God's very, very choosy about the people to whom he gives real spiritual power, because not many people can stand it. And David couldn't see it. But all the time his kingdom was growing, and his army was growing, and his harem was growing. That was part of the decline too. He finishes up with a vast regiment of wives. He couldn't see it. But he had changed for the worse. He had become another David. You see, there are two Davids in these chapters. There is David, the man after God's own heart. That's the spiritual man. That's the man who is doing something for God and the kingdom. And fighting against that David, there's the old David, the old carnal, worldly David. You see, your soul is a battleground. If you're a Christian, you're a two-nature person. I could introduce you tonight to a missionary friend of mine from Japan, who almost wrecked his missionary service amongst the Japanese, whom he loved and worshipped and served for Christ's sake, because he didn't believe that he was a two-nature man. He believed that he was just a one-nature man, and that when you become a Christian, it's all Christ's nature, and it isn't. You just need to read the New Testament to see that after you become a Christian, it's Adam against Christ. It's the first Adam against the second Adam. It's the old you against the new you. It's the once born you against the twice born you. It's the carnal you against the spiritual you. Do you understand this? David couldn't see, you see, that he was changing for the worse. The lights, the devil and the wings with the knobs and the buttons. David didn't see the lights had changed. You see, in all these years, it's an awful thing to say, he became a man of blood, massacring women and children, wiping out villages,
So much so that his last word before he died was the word blood. Fancy dying with that word on your lips. He died saying, God would not let me build a house for him in Jerusalem, for I am a man of blood. He had changed, you see. We're all changing. Do you believe that? C.S. Lewis says that we're either on the way to becoming something like gods and goddesses, or we are on the way to becoming something so dreadful that we would shriek and run from it in our worst nightmares. But we are all changing. David, 1 Chronicles 12 and verse 35, of the Danites, 28,600 men equipped for battle, 36 of Asher, 40,000 seasoned troops ready for battle, 37 of the Reubenites and Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh from the other side of the Jordan, 120,000 men armed with all the weapons of war. 38. All these men of war, arrayed in battle order, came to Hebron with full intent to make David king over all Israel. Likewise, all the rest of Israel were of a single mind to make David king, and they were there with David for 3 days, eating and drinking, for their brethren had made preparations for them. Well, David made 3 mistakes. Let's think about that in closing. He had just won 3 resounding victories. You remember what they are? First of all, the victory of meekness in sparing Saul's life in the cave when his enemy was laid before him in a most embarrassing position in the cave. You remember the story? And David wouldn't touch him. Secondly, the story of Abigail and Nabal, and how David refused to kill Nabal and left the vengeance to God. That's a hard victory, that. And thirdly, how Saul was laid out in a drugged sleep at his feet, and David refused to kill him because he was the Lord's anointed. 3 tremendous victories for any man to win on the way to his kingdom. Have you learned them yet? Have you won these victories in your Christian life? Meekness, leaving the vengeance to God, mercy, 3 resounding triumphs. But you can't live on past victories. You see, it's a great failing in Christians to treat their triumphs as if they were kind of spiritual credit in the bank of God, as if they were capital in the bank of God. And it's possible for a Christian to go on living his life on past victories, and he doesn't see that he's changing. You see, you can no more live on yesterday's triumphs than you can live on yesterday's manna. Last Sunday's sermons are no good for today's problems. Manna had to be eaten at once. And if you don't use it immediately, it turns to corruption.
The word of God is preached to be used by you. You must use it now. You must use God's word immediately. Because if you don't, it'll turn to corruption. You can't use yesterday's manna, and you can't live on yesterday's victories. That was David's first mistake. The second mistake was this. He left the land of Judah. Now in the Old Testament, land and blessing go together. You are blessed in the land. It's when you stay in the land that you are blessed. If you go outside the land, you lose the blessing, like Abraham, who did it twice. Walked right through the land of Palestine and out the other side into Egypt, and became a liar with Pharaoh and told Pharaoh that Sarah was his sister, and Pharaoh nearly married her out of the land. Later on, out of the land, he did the same thing again with King Abimelech and told him that Sarah was his sister. Jacob rockets out of the land to find a wife, and he loses the blessing. Israel lands in Egypt, out of the land, and they become slaves. It's what I call the magnetic south. There is a magnetic south, you know, in all our personalities. There was a magnet that kept drawing Abraham out of the land, because the land and the blessing go together, and David rockets out of the land. And the blessing goes. Now, of course, you can't go out of Christ. But you can go out of His best. If you're out of the land, then you're out of Christ's best for you. You're in a place where He can't use you, or He can't make you fruitful, or He can't make you a serviceable Christian. If you're out of the land. And lastly, his third mistake. Are you learning the lessons of these? I preach all this to myself. He's in far too big a hurry. The spiritual man is a slow man. He's a man who thinks out the steps. He uses his head rather than his heart. I trust Christians who use their heads rather than their hearts. You can't build your religion on your heart, because your heart is an emotional business and your heart will lead you astray. You can't build a religion on emotional experiences. And here is David rocketing from town to town to town, and he's missed the point that the spiritual man is a slow man. He thinks it out. Listen to these words from Proverbs. David's son wrote these words: "He who makes haste with his feet misses his way." Listen to the words of Jesus: "By your endurance," patient, slow endurance, "you will gain your lives." Listen to the words of Isaiah: "He that believeth shall not make haste." Real spiritual growth is a slow thing. I
I distrust all the instants you find amongst Christians today. Instant consecration, instant transformation, instant sanctification. It's like instant custard, you know. You just open the tin, you know. It's painless. Painless salvation. Jesus without tears, you know. That kind of religion. Drop of a hanky, sanctification. When I drop the hanky, you will all be sanctified. No, no. According to the Bible, he that believeth shall not make haste. In another verse, in the words of the Authorized Version, Jesus says, in patience possess your souls. It's a slow, slow business. Do you know how old Moses was before he started his life's work? He was 80. There's hope for you. And he didn't find a wife until he was over 40. So there's hope for me too. 80 before he started his ministry. And 120 before he died. Slow. How old was Jesus when he started his ministry? He was 30. And his ministry lasted about 2 years. All that you read in the Gospels takes place in 2 years. Well, just over 2 years. 30 years of training for 2 years of ministry. Think of the Apostle Paul. After he got converted on the Damascus Road, he disappears for 14 years. They're called the 14 silent years because no one knows where he was. Scholars think he was down in Arabia, in the sand, the deserts, thinking out the gospel, the implications of what had just happened to him on the Damascus Road. 14 years. Nowadays, churchmen would say that was an awful waste of time. But it produced the goods. And David hasn't got the message. He goes rocketing about, you see. Thinks that this is how the kingdom gets done. Energy, speed, busyness. It's a slow business. I tell you, I have more hope of patient sloggers than I have of whiz kids, as we call them in the ministry. You know, that's what ministers call other ministers who come in with a great blaze of glory and then it all fizzles out. A minister who comes into a church and packs it and it's all full of energy and excitement and adoration of the new man, and then after about a couple of years the whole thing fizzles out like a damp squib. We call these ministers whiz kids. Greased lightning. A quick flash. Accomplishing nothing. I tell you, there is far more hope for Christians who are patient sloggers. Christians who just hammer away at the Christian life, make the mistakes, pick themselves up, dust themselves down, and start all over again. In the words of the Frank Sinatra song, there is more hope for Christians who do this than there is for all the whiz kids. David's third mistake is he's become a whiz kid. He that believeth shall not make haste. Sanctification, well, it's a slow, slow, slow business. But my friend, it produces the goods for Jesus. Have you tried it? Or do you live in a world of instants? Painless salvation, sanctification at the drop of a hanky. Is that the sort of world you live in? It's not a real world, that. It's not a scriptural world, that. It's not a Christian world. Patient, hard, slogging. That's the way to do it. And it produces the goods. For Jesus.
Amen. May God bless His own word, His name, be the honor and the praise.